We have Columbus meeting to order, established by County Board of Supervisors for December 16th, 2014. Please rise for a salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Doran, you have a report from closed session?
We have nothing to report out of closed session that was held at the special meeting at 5:30 this evening.
Thank you. Okay, this is the time we have public comment for any members of the audience who wish to address this board on a non-agenda item. If you'd like to speak to an agenda item, you have to wait until that item comes up. So, Mr. Vernon Lee Price.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, gentlemen on the board, Mr. CEO, ladies and gentlemen, Stennis Falls County. My name is Vernon Price. I am a homeless advocate. I'm going to be touching on three things tonight, very briefly, if I may. This is a PDF document by the National Law Center, No Safe Place. I believe that this has been emailed to the CEO, and I believe Supervisor Withrow may have this. I know that I passed it to your assistant, Casey Smith. I'd like to take a brief moment of reading from Wrongs to Right that is in the PDF, No Safe Places. This has also been PDF'd and forwarded to, hopefully, the CEO's office, and I know Supervisor Withrow and Mr. Chiesa. The common rights violations experienced by homeless Americans describe homeless Bill of Rights enacted and proposed in several states across the country and provides advocates with guidance for pursuing similar legislation in their states. The Homeless Bill of Rights, a promising new approach to recognizing and protecting the rights of homeless Americans. Illinois State Senator Ira L. Silverton, many of us who enjoy these rights take them for granted and do not realize that something as simple as not having a physical address would keep us from utilizing these rights. Homeless people deserve to be afforded the same basic rights as any other citizen. We find that the experience of high numbers of visible homeless people in their community. Many cities have chosen to mask the problem by passing laws disregarded to movement homeless people out of public spaces. In brief, we find that information from the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, Cruel and Inhumane, Degrading, and Homeless by the United States under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. That has also been forwarded. That was enacted August 13th of 2013 by the United Nations enactment. I believe that's a 41-page document that y'all do have a copy of. Ordinances that prohibit the life of sustaining activities of homeless people in the public, even when there are no shelters, sheltered alternatives, criminalize homeless persons' very existence. Moreover, these laws have the effect of increasing and prolonging homelessness at significant expenses to American taxpayers. In the end, no interest is served, and the entire community suffers. Ladies and gentlemen of Stennis Falls County, gentlemen of the board, Mr. Chairman, I beseech you to take a look at these and let's move as one. Let's move as one moves, we all move. I'd like to thank CEO Rising for his presentation to the Homeless Coalition because, I mean, that was an emotional moment. we've all got to move together, not against each other. So I thank you, Mr. CEO, for that. That it was very enlightening. And as we move forward on this, let's consider the assembly cannot move forward with their job with this AB 5 without the support of the chairman and the boards of the counties and the cities behind them. Thank you so much for your time, your consideration on this matter, and the privilege to speak before you tonight. If there's any questions or comments, I'll be glad to ask.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Rebecca Harrington.
Good evening, Chairman DeMartini, Chief Executive Officer.
Oh, so, okay, sorry. I usually can project really well.
Good evening. I'm Rebecca Harrington with South Modesto MAC, and I know that you all know me very well and have seen me out and about. And I'm back to be a little more active again. Today we read an article in the paper which had to do with the Park Lawn area that has had, after 40 years, brought in sewer lines and everything, which is really great. In all the meetings that we had at our MAC, never once was the drainage issue discussed and how it was going to be handled, at least to the best of my knowledge. In seeing what is happening here with the community, my son took the opportunity to drive throughout the community and actually saw for himself what the residents are dealing with. And I was a little upset, but mostly just a little disappointed that better planning did not go into that whole process, especially since this whole community has had an issue with, of course, this not having sewers, the septic tanks and the drainage, et cetera. So it seems like it's just kind of compounded itself, but in a different avenue. And then also in our particular area, which is right off of South 9th Street, Hosmer and Bystrom at Erickson, we continue to have extreme flooding. I know that there are rock wells there. I know that we are hoping that the ground percolation would help that whole water sitting up on and pooling in that area. But there's been some complaints from some businesses there, a new one, going like, what's going on here? Why isn't the county dealing with this? And we've been dealing with it for as long as we've been there. Some years, of course, are worse. And don't get me wrong, we truly appreciate the water. But it is real difficult for people who use that particular area to walk back and forth to either one of the recycling businesses that are there to help their households along. So I'm hoping that perhaps the county can come out and look at that area and see what they can do better for the rock wells. And I know that when they've come out and they've piled up piles and piles of rocks out there for that, and we constantly are shooing people away and telling them, no, you cannot take that home for your landscaping, which they do. They're going to say, what are you going to do? And I said, oh, I'm going to call Adam. He's my friend. And they don't want to hear from the sheriff. So I said, I can take your license plate and hand it over, and they don't like that either. But I do hope that you can address the drainage issues that Park Lawn is having with something that's coming up in funding, whatever you can do to help them. I think it's very sad that with all of the good work, something not so positive has come from it. And also in our area of our community, if you could look into what could possibly be done to help that area there. Because when these heavy rains do happen, we literally have to go around on other areas. And like I said, there's so many people that walk that do not have cars to walk their children to school, to go do their daily business. So I hope that the board and everyone would take that into consideration. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rebecca. Carmen Sabatino.
Good evening. I received two subpoenas from the county council's office in regard to the lawsuit of Frank Carson against Stanislaus County and DA investigator Steve Jacobson. This is the second subpoena. This is what you're paying for. Today's deposition was canceled, and we don't know why. In the interest of time, I will be deposed, and I will answer appropriate questions in regard to Carson versus Stanislaus County and Steve Jacobson, even though I was not present at the assault. One question I am sure will not be asked is about the conduct of DA investigator Jacobson in the bail bonds trial. For those of you who don't know, it's a 5-month trial. You wouldn't know it by the newspaper. But I have been monitoring the 5-month trial, and Frank Carson was the attorney for the defense. After 5 months, the jury returned a verdict of not guilty on all counts. And even the three alternates hoped that all 12 jurors were in agreement that they got it too. The jurors cried and gathered around Mr. Carson to inquire about what he was not allowed to tell the jury during the trial. DA investigator Jacobson took the lead in this case on behalf of the district attorney. Some jurors confided that they were interviewed in the hallway during jury recess by Jacobson. He's a man you're going to defend. Yesterday, I sent the following email to Judge Scott T. Steffen, and I will read it to you. The Scott T. Steffen, Judge, Stanislaus County Superior Court, jury tampering by DA investigator Steve Jacobson. At least two jurors from the O.J. Bail Bonds case have reported the jurors were interviewed in the courthouse before going into deliberations by District Attorney Investigator Steve Jacobson. Your jury was tampered with just before they went into deliberations. The backstory will not divulge the names of the jurors, but will report a factual account of the incidents. We do request that you poll the jury and issue a statement concerning the truthfulness of the jurors' comments and what actions you are prepared to take against Steve Jacobson. This memo is for public release by the backstory. In my opinion, County Council, the Office of the County Council, has engaged in criminal activities, not only in the bail bonds trial, but I know this from 4 years. I was mayor of Modesto. History has now recorded the activities of Ray Simon, Reagan Wilson, and Michael Krosnick. What is important today is that the corruption still exists in your ranks. What is important is that the system worked. After 8 years of prosecution, a criminal jury stood up and said, enough is enough. Despite my warnings, this board has continued to bankroll the district attorney, Adam Christensen, and even the office of the county council. Christensen testified, and we do have the transcripts, of course, that he disbanded the gang unit in order to use resources for the bail bonds case. How ironic. This is in Department 7. Across the hall in Department 1 was a trial concerning a gang murder. That trial was taking place at the same time. The DA, sheriff, and county council have all failed the taxpayers, and now you must depend on risk management for the rest of the story. I've come to you, I have told you my experiences with law enforcement. I have told you that, I won't tell you anymore, you'll have to read it in the back story. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Mr. Dennis Casey. Thank you, gentlemen. I apologize for my attire and the knowledge that I do not attain at this time to how to address all you county supervisors and the CEO and the county council. I think that's how that goes, but I'll get that down as we meet again later. What I'm here for tonight is to talk about the Olympic track area with the purpose of the swells that we have been blessed with here. Some time ago when this thing, the area, and by the way, most everybody that I have talked to in the neighborhood appreciates the sewer that we finally got. Yes, my grandparents moved in there in the area in 46. They brought me home from the hospital in 1954 to live at 808 Dover. In the year of 1959, they moved up the street to 709 Dover, where my father still resides. My mother passed in 01. So 8 years ago, I moved home to take care of my father and have been there ever since. And he's appreciative because he, over the years, he's tried to get something started about the sewer system. I only have 5 minutes, so I'm going to speed this up. I don't have an alarm for me to go off. When this started to happen to the neighborhood there, I worked construction all my life, so I can see what's happening and I know what the end result's going to be. So I called my supervisor, Jimmy DeMartini, and he was very responsive to me. We talked about this, and he came out and we conversed, and he told me that the department's going to work with the neighborhood people. So I took that as the word of heart, and I talked to the local fellow. His name is Peter Song. He's the man that's coordinating the physical paperwork and the field inspections for this. And I told him my situation. I lowered my father. He is disabled. He rides a scooter. It's a two-step to get into the pickup. I load him in front of the house. And we don't have to get out into the street. The neighborhood's not one of the better controlled streets, and there has been accidents out there. So Mr. DeMartini told me that the department was going to work with folks around there. So for 2 days, they told me, don't worry, you're fine. And even Knife River, the road company that did the underground and the roading, the mom said, well, I guess we're not going to mess with you. So I said, okay. Friday comes around, I go to the doctor, and we have to have some surgery, I have to do some tests. I'm gone to do the tests, and my father calls me, and he tells me, hey, these guys are here to tell you to move your truck, or they're going to tow them away. So, okay, so I finished up quickly what I had to do and come home. So then I go over and I see the number two man in charge is Chris Brady. So I said, what's up, man? You guys are, I was kind of upset because I was led to believe I was going to be okay because I needed the front to load my father. Okay, so he says no, and then he asked me this question. How long have I lived in this neighborhood? Because he's explaining to me how we have such a water problem there that we don't have. And so I informed him that 54 I came home, and 59 we moved up the street, so I kind of know everything that goes on around there. So he couldn't answer me in any language after that. So then I left and went home and removed my trucks before he called the police, the sheriff's department on me, and, you know, I don't need to make things worse than it is. So talking back again with Mr. Machado, he tells me, he gives me four scenarios to try to tell me how good these swells are. So each time he come up with a scenario of how these are wonderful for us, I get a response, a retort to these things, and sounded reasonable to him. And then after the fifth question, I got this answer. Well, I guess we're just not going to see eye to eye. But, you know, when this is all over, we'll get together for a meeting, and we'll just talk about this. And I told the man, I don't see a reason that we're going to have a meeting, because this is just the most ludicrous thing I've never heard of. Uh-oh. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. I have some... Did you send the pictures? Okay, there are some pictures there of some of the swells that he has that he dug, that the water retained in there. They collapse out on the bottom, and the water is draining under the ground into the main line. And one collapsed on the corner of Atlantic, and the big lake reservoir that they have in front of the department has drained into the homes. I went by there today, took some pictures of that. They've got their solution was pour concrete into the hole. I came up walking yesterday, and I counted about 9 other small holes, not humongous, just the water of the swells that percolated through, broke through the ground, and emptied themselves. You have a mud area, but no water. And it's a small hole, but that's where the water's going down. And I tried to tell these guys, please, just fill the holes. And I will be back to talk about the sidewalk situation that they want to put on there. They want to put it in front of the property. And I believe I told Mr. DiMartini that 2 months ago, a man and his mom got attacked by dogs off of Coles Landing Road, and he died. And the mother went home after the hospital stay from being chewed up by these dogs. So Mr. Machado told me this. Don't you want to see little Jamie and Jimmy walk down the sidewalk and not have to walk out into the street?
Well, you come back. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And I apologize for going over. I'll not mutter as much next time, and I'll be clear.
Thank you. Mr. Machado, you want to address any of this? There was a story in the paper about it this morning, and perhaps you could give us some of your insight on this type of design.
Sure. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Risen, Mr. Baring, Matt Machado, Director of Public Works, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to inform the board of some of these situations that we have going on. First off, the Parkland Sewer Project is not yet complete, unfortunately. I would say we're about 75% done. Unfortunately, the last bit of work is some of this grading work, the swales and the shoulder backing, and some of that's incomplete. It will change in terms of look and operation. maybe to start with, let's talk a little about the history of it. And so I heard earlier a little concern about the outreach. And so the outreach that we conducted started about a year ago. We met, and I'll give you some precise dates. On January 2nd, 2014, we presented this concept to the Parkland United Neighbors Group. And we're just trying to get some feedback from the neighbors about the swales and the potential future sidewalks and all of that scope of work. On April 3rd, we presented that and more information to the same group, the Parkland United Neighbors Group. These meetings were held within the community at the church right off of, I think it's Midway. On April 10th, we presented the same presentation to the South Modesto MAC. On May 1st, we presented more detail to the Parkland United Neighbors Group. And then on May 8th, we presented that additional detail to the South Modesto MAC as well. So we tried to get out there, we tried to inform people in advance of the project to get their feedback. And the one thing we did hear over and over was that sidewalk was important, solving some of the drainage needs was important. And the drainage needs are fairly unique in this area. Not everybody floods, but the people that do flood or did flood was fairly severe. It would flood across the street. And so the concept to solve that, in addition to the existing drainage that is out there today, which there is a small basin, there is a small pump station out there today, but to further that, to expand the capacity of that storm drainage system, is to spread that puddle. And it's not perfect, for sure, it's not perfect, but to spread that puddle across everybody to keep the streets dry. And today, in fact, over the past month, we've gotten we've actually gotten more than 8 inches of rain. That's more than we've gotten in a month's time and probably the history of record keeping for rainfall. In fact, the one event we had, 3 inches of rain, was almost a 200-year event. So we've got a lot of rain. We've tested this system now. And I'll tell you today, and I've driven this neighborhood every day and during the storms and even off storms, the streets that have swales, the streets are dry. The asphalt is dry. The swales are full. They're doing their job. Is it fabulous? Is it perfect? No. It's a mud hole in front of some of these homeowners' parcels, but the streets are dry. And you compare that to the past where the streets were flooded, we've made improvement. It's not perfect, but we've added capacity to a system that was deficient at best. Some of the things that we're still working on, like I said, we're still under construction. At the end of construction, we will have a 7-foot shoulder, improved shoulder. It'll be made up of asphalt and base rock. It'll be a place to park your car. It'll be solid. It'll be compacted. It'll be ADA compliant. It'll be a good foundation for parking. The swales will continue to be there, and some of them are draining very well today. And I think Mr. Casey alluded to the fact that some of them are draining maybe too well. And what some of that is the laterals that are contractor built to the property line. Some of those laterals, the physical pipes that go to the property line and then vertical, weren't compacted perfectly, so they're taking water. Well, that's a temporary problem that they have, the contractor has, not the county. We're going to resolve that through our punch list, through our contract administration. We'll resolve those compaction issues. At the end of the day, we're going to have swales that will work, that will solve some of our needs. We won't solve all of them. We hope this is a step in the right direction. We continue to do some outreach. We've met with CRLA. They're great partners of ours, and we'd like to continue to do that, and we'd like to continue to work with individual landowners. Because some of them have special needs, and we know that. And even though we think our swales are a good step in the right direction, they're not perfect, and there still may be issues that we need to deal with, such as driveway access, and we're willing to get out there and add some base rock or add some sort of surface that people can use if they're in wheelchairs or in motorized scooters. And so we're not there yet, but we want to get there. I guess at the end of the day, we feel like we've done outreach. We feel like we have a good design. We're not complete, and we hope to get there in the next couple of months. And we're certainly here to answer your questions. We did put together a few sketches to try to show the before and the after. And the after, one of the things that's interesting about it is that we've added width to these roads. You know, we gutted these roads for the sewer project, and now we have wider roads. We will have improved shoulders, and we will have added capacity. I think those are all positive things. There are negatives with them. People that never had puddles in front of their house will have puddles. But we're trying to work through it, and we're trying to resolve it for everybody. If you have any questions, I'm here. Otherwise, I'll take a seat.
Any questions for Mr. Machado? Okay, thank you for your explanation.
Thank you.
Sir William McClure.
Thank you, panel. I'm basically here in support of Mr. Vernon Price, who spoke. He was the first runner-up. And I'd just like to reiterate a decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. This is in Los Angeles. It was the Los Angeles Municipal Code, Section 8502, which prohibits the use of a vehicle as living quarters either overnight, day by day, or otherwise. The panel held that that section provides inadequate notice of the unlawful conduct it prescribes and opens the door to discriminatory enforcement against the homeless and the poor. Accordingly, the panel held that the section 8502 violates the due process clause of the 14th Amendment as an unconstitutionally vague statute. Now, I've been living in a van myself for 2 years, and I have been told at least a dozen times. It's always wrong from 4 in the morning, either NPD, which was most of the approached by the Industrial Police Department. But I must come out, show ID, and open the door, come out, show ID, and it's like, after about the 12th time, I was compliant. And I realized that there's a whole lot of broken. And about the fourth time, I told this officer, no, I'm not coming out, I'm not showing the ID, have a good night, officer. And he had to leave. He realized that he had nothing to substantiate his approach. He could not approach me, for one thing, because there's no law being broken. And, but the very next morning, I received an $1,800 traffic citation, which was totally made up. And I went through all the loops, jumped through all the loops. It was a hardship for me because I have no income. I'm homeless. I live in a van. And I was on my way to make a little bit of money cleaning windows. And I received an $1,800 ticket. I went through all the steps, and it was dismissed at the final, very last minute, dismissed per officer. It was a blatant harassment. And also, the highway patrol had approached my vehicle, told me to come out and do all this stuff, and I didn't want to be harassed anymore, so I went ahead and opened the door, and I have a tendency to talk a lot, and I talked to this poor officer's ear off, and he later, I told him the whole history of being homeless and how it is such a ridiculous hardship that is made so much harder. You know, granted, there's a percentage of homeless people that are there because of their poor choices, but there's a percentage of homeless people that are there by no fault of their own. They just couldn't find work, and there they are. And it's made so much more difficult, you know, especially with the police department being dispatched to target the homeless, you know, especially when they're living in their vehicles. And they're not breaking any laws, they're not desecrating the premises or trashing the place. And anyways, it's right here in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that states that this is, it's not right. And thank you. That's all I had to say. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. McClure.
Thank you.
That is all the comment cards that I have for public comment. Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to address this board on a non-agenda item? Okay, seeing that, we will move to the consent calendar. Item B11 has been pulled for a separate discussion and vote. Is there anybody on this board who wishes to pull an additional consent agenda item? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar except for item B11.
I'll move to approve the consent calendar with the exception of B11.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, motion has been made and seconded. We approve the consent calendar minus item B11. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is carried 5-0. We'll now move to agenda item B11. The surveillance camera for the aircraft.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Doran, Mr. Risen, Adam Christensen, your sheriff, to present to you an agenda item to upgrade and replace current technology, or update and replace old technology with current technology specific to our efforts in continuing to fight against drug trafficking organizations throughout the state of California. Just a quick history lesson back in 2001, using money through the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Task Force, we obtained monies to purchase a Cessna 206, which is a surveillance platform that's used primarily to chase load cars all over the state. Drug trafficking organizations use a variety of vehicles to move large quantities of narcotics, primarily methamphetamine, heroin, marijuana, and we utilize the aircraft as a surveillance platform to track drug trafficking organizations. Over the years, the current surveillance system, the GyroCam that came with the aircraft, has become non-operational. You can't find parts for it anymore. It was again purchased new in 2001, and like everything else, technology evolves. And so we set about looking for an updated option, and thus before you tonight, the MX-10, which is the latest technology available. It's the same system that's being purchased by the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office for their 206. It's a very important tool for us. We've identified monies available to us to make this purchase without net county cost. This is all primarily narcotics enforcement monies that we're using, including asset forfeiture funds, which is money that we seize from the bad guys. I understand that there was perhaps some concern about the cost of installation, and so let me run that down quickly, and then I'm happy to answer any other questions you may have. Anytime you're dealing with aviation, it's very expensive by simply the nature of the business. It's a very unique, specific area of not only aviation but technology. And in this particular case, or as in any case, with any aircraft, we are unable to make any modifications to any aircraft without very specific approvals, engineering, what we call an STC certification, which is a supplemental type certificate, and all of that has to comply with federal aviation regulations and the FAA. So with specific to the mounting and the camera system, this is what's called a change type design. There are only a few entities who are allowed or authorized by the FAA to do these installations. In this case, it's Hangar 1 in Southern California. And so combined, that drives your cost of installation up, again, by the very nature of the aviation industry. The backside is you have to have an STC certification, which in essence says or certifies that after the modifications, the aircraft is still airworthy and is in compliance with all of those federal aviation regulations and the FAA. So again, this is simply an upgrade or a replacement to keep our technology current, and it is an expensive effort, especially when you're dealing with this type of technology and combined with aviation. I'm happy to answer any questions if that satisfies the issue over the installation costs.
Well, I have a few because, the cost of this is just, so unbelievably high. I mean, the whole cost is $763,000 for a camera. But this $350,000 for installation, did you get any other bids outside of this company, this Hangar 1?
The Hangar 1 is the only company that is authorized by the FAA to do this installation with the STC certification. There isn't anybody else out there, unless they fly the aircraft out of state.
No wonder they're charging $350,000 then if there's nobody else in business. I mean, that's just outrageous.
It's like buying a Maserati, sir. It's expensive.
The Ferrari's even worse than the Maserati.
There you go.
But there's no problem with money involved in that. So.
Yeah, it is an expensive venture.
And how many other counties have cameras like this? I mean, there can't be very many.
Actually, the CHP has several aircraft designed with this in mind. Sacramento County is currently upgrading their technology. Same project, same cost. And there are several sheriff's offices in Southern California who operate aircraft for the purposes of drug interdiction and chasing load cars and drug trafficking organizations.
I'm not knowing much about this type of camera, I have to admit. What is it about it that's so special that it costs so much? Do I take pictures?
We can provide you a couple photographs if you like, but primarily, if you look at page 3, it's a multi-sensor, multi-spectral imaging system. It's gyro-stabilized. Basically, from about 4,000 feet, we can see right down inside of the vehicles we're chasing. It's a highly specialized technology that is developed not only by the military, but used by law enforcement and again for the purposes of drug interdiction. It has forward-looking infrared capabilities. We can record all of the surveillance. And remember, too, that this cost also is not just the camera mounted outside the aircraft, but also the controls and the monitors that are mounted inside the aircraft.
Okay. Well, this is all news to me. I was just shocked by what it cost.
If it makes you feel any better, you know, a good majority of this, I'm spending the drug dealer's money, so.
Well, I mean, you're using fund balance. About like $500,000, I think.
Yeah, it's all CalMet, SDEA, HIDA, and asset forfeiture monies, yes. The only other alternative, Mr. Chairman, is that, you know, we can't replace the technology, and therefore it makes the platform really unusable.
And there's no other law enforcement agency, highway patrol, or anybody that can do this for you?
Well, I suppose we could, but that would come with a price tag, and then we'd have to schedule that aircraft for our narcotics investigations as well.
Any other questions from the board?
Just comments, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that a lot of our crime in our county is drug-related, and I think the sheriff will probably back me up on that. And the fact that we either replace this camera or we don't, we either continue the fight against drugs or we don't, the answer for me is simple. We need to continue the fight against drugs. That's what the camera costs. I don't think we'd want to put deputies into an aircraft that is not airworthy, and FAA requires this. Yes, it's a steep price tag, but it's drug money that's paying for it, and I will make the motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, motion has been made and seconded to approve this item B11. Any further comments? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion carries 5-0.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Okay, we will now move to agenda item B12, Active Partnership Recognition.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring, and to our audience. I'm Patricia Hill-Thomas from the Chief Executive Office, and I think Coach Lombardi said it well when he said, individual commitment to a group effort. That is what makes a team work, a company work, a society work, and a civilization work. And tonight, we're going to ask you to pause and recognize some tremendous team efforts. With me at the table tonight is Mr. Pete Duenas. I'd like to thank Pete for his work on this effort. We talk about a lot of important stuff at every Board of Supervisors meeting, tonight included. But when we take a moment and pause and recognize the good works, those county departments, those county employees, and their partners that go the extra mile, that go beyond the call of duty, and the results of their work shows in this community we serve. That's what we do when annually your board stops and pauses and recognizes extraordinary partnership efforts. Your board has a very, very, very important list of top priorities. And included in that priority is one priority that encompasses every county department and every county program. We have a safe community in public safety. We have a healthy community in our health and social service programs. But your board's priority for effective partnerships is a challenge to every single county employee, to every single county department, every single county program, to find a way to do it better and find a way to partner with others to maximize the service to our community. So that overarching priority that your board has about ensuring and promoting effective partnerships is important to all of us. You are committed to building strong relationships with the local government, with state government, with the federal government, with nonprofits and our business partners. And you encourage us through this being one of your Board of Supervisors' priorities to think differently and not act as islands, but rather act together with others to do a better job of serving this community. We have your board identified a board champion for each one of the Board of Supervisors' priorities. In this case, Supervisor Dick Monteith is the Board of Supervisors' representative and champion for the effective partnerships. He has been for years, and he actually sits on the recognition committee. So Supervisor Monteith will speak in a moment, but we'd like to thank you, Dick, for your extra efforts and your very positive encouragement to all of us
and
when it comes to partnerships.
They
have, and we'll recognize them in just a bit. Our committee members are also here. Three of the four are here tonight in our audience. We have Mr. Mark Averill, who is with the City of Modesto. Mark, thank you again for being a part of our effort. And we have the wonderful Ms. Carmen Rad. Carmen, you've helped us in so many ways on our Equal Rights Commission and others. And we don't have with us tonight, but we are pleased to have, for about the fourth year in a row, Mr. Jeff Reed, who's a member of the Keys Municipal Advisory Council. We'll come back to that in a little bit. Wow, we have so many applications this year. And I'm not on the committee. I encourage and champion this effort, but they had a hard job to do. And we wanted to take a moment tonight and thank them all, many of whom are in the audience. In addition to the two that we'll recognize in a moment, we had a proposal, a submission from our excellent Department of Environmental Resources highlighting the Central Valley Chemical Safety Day. From our library, the Learning Quest Adult Literacy Program. From our CEO Office of Emergency Services, the Stanislaus Operational Aerial Council effort. From our Parks and Recreation Program, our Hatch Park Baseball Field renovation, which was awesome. And from the Department of Public Works, the Regional Flood Management Plan. But only two can be selected for the annual recognition. And I'll remind you and I'll remind the audience, as you leave tonight, make sure you look in the foyer at this wonderful plaque that we had made a couple of years ago, because those that are recognized annually by your board, their names go on forever. So maybe 30 or 40 or 50 years from now, or generations, there'll be this wonderful plaque that talks about how the county government partnered with the community to serve this community better. So this is a very robust process. There's a real evaluation, and there are five key criteria. You know that's important to your board. A focus on the alignment with your board's strategic direction, the diversity of the team, their actual partnership's impact in the community, the measurable outcomes of their work, which Pete will talk about in a little bit, and the financial measures. This committee put a lot of time on. They evaluated the submissions. They interviewed all of the proposers. And then they had the very, very, very difficult job of picking among a list of many great partnerships the top two. So tonight, we'll ask you to recognize two of those seven submissions. First, the Community Services Agency for their extended foster care youth, which are youth after the year at their age of 18, chosen in the category of recognizing partnerships with non-governmental agencies and organizations. So Stan says, why is the Community Service Agency receiving an award with non-governmental agencies and organizations? And that reminded us, thank you, Stan, to say their list of partners are awesome. Other agencies, nonprofits, community members, this is an amazing program, and Pete will talk to you about it. You'll hear a little bit later about it from Supervisor Monteith. And the second is the Stanislaus County Affordable Care Act implementation, the implementation of the federal health care reform. And that is a partnership comprised of our County Health Services Agency, our Community Services Agency, and our Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. And they were chosen in the category of intergovernmental programs and partnerships. So with that, Pete's going to give you a little bit of detail, and then we'll get on to the recognition part of this evening's program.
Good evening. So the first one, as Betty mentioned, is the Extended Foster Care Youth Program from the Community Services Agency. And, this program came into action. It was enacted in 2010 as the California Foster Connections to Success Act, Assembly Bill 12. This program here in Stanislaus County didn't start until 2012. So you'll see in a couple minutes some of the outcomes related to that. But the criteria for some of these, or for these individuals, are they have to be 18 years old and foster care to remain in up to 21 years of age. You know, and when you think of that, again, I keep coming back to the outcomes. I want to go right away, but I'll try to slow down a little bit. And it's really, Patty was mentioning the collaborative efforts that have occurred locally, statewide with the federal agencies, faith-based and nonprofits. You know, and some of the partner agencies are, some are here tonight, are probation, housing, employment, behavioral health recovery services, education, AsperaNet, which is a local nonprofit, Center for Human Services, another local nonprofit, the Family Justice Center, Family Resource Centers, the Foster Parent Association, and Project Yes. As well, and as we heard in the presentations when they presented to the panel, that, you know, that the very beginning of this collaboration, that the foster parents and the foster youth were real important in this process. They were a big part of, they were stakeholders in this, as well as the dependency and delinquency court, and as we've mentioned, the state and federal agencies. So when we talk about outcomes, so far that since 2012, they've had 140 youth in it, and when you look at success rate with high school completions, so far, again, 33 youths completed high school compared to 9 in 2011. In 2013, 10 completed high school and 16 proceeded to attend the post-secondary vocational schools. As of July of this year, 44 youth are living independently in their own apartment compared to 21 in 2013. The other outcome, again, is that since 2 months ago, 15 youth are working, 7 are attending MJC, and 3 are attending the university. These are, as you can see, excellent outcomes related to this project in itself. And they're going to have their first graduating class this year, and 5 youth are going to be turning 21. All have completed high school, which is a huge success. 4 are living independently in their own apartment, and 1 is in a job course. Some may be here tonight, I don't know. In terms of some of the accolades and success that the program has had, you know, they've been really looked upon as from a national level. They're going to be a model program to be presented at the National Resource Center for Youth Development Conference in Oklahoma. The child care worker, child welfare manager, who's has been selected to provide technical assistance to other states in the implementation of their extended foster care programs as well. And lastly is, back in September of this year, a couple months ago, they were also elected to be a model program for the federal government coming to visit. I happened to be there, and there's a lot of good things said by some of the federal representatives, as well as state. Okay. The second one that we're honoring tonight is the Sassos County Affordable Care Act Implementation Partnership. As Patty alluded, this is a federal health care reform program, and you know, it's allowed for expansion for federally funded Medi-Cal benefits, serving the uninsured and to most of Sassos' medically indigent adult population. It also has a target population by all three of these agencies, Health Services Agency, Community Services Agency, and Behavioral Health and Recovery Services, work together to ensure a seamless transition and avoid disruptions in health care. And I just want to expand a little bit about that, because I think the theme in the presentation by this partnership when they presented to the panel was about how can we assist these individuals so it doesn't disrupt their service. So, I mean, I think that hit home quite a bit with the panel itself. So I just wanted to mention that as well as an added. As some of their partnership development strategies, they received some funding from the Blue Shield of California to assist with the transition, you know, for these individuals. They did a lot of community groups serving the uninsured, you know, Well, they met with community groups sort of to ensure and were kept informed of the process. And this was to, again, to ensure a smooth transition. This partnership established mutual goals to ensure no interruption or delay in provision of medical care. You'll see in a couple minutes, but there's some co-located family service specialists that were located at both DHRS as well as HSA that helped with the transition. Some of the targeted outreach efforts were that there was a hotline, an email address created in the event that there was any issues in the process. They created a process to accept and process health enrollment applications within 24 hours. And this is specifically for the people who needed medical assistance. There was multiple enrollment events held on Saturdays for specially invited target populations to apply for coverage. And this also was a huge success. And finally, there was an enrollment application information sent to the medically indigent customers. So some of the outcomes for this partnership, there was 5,746 unique MIA patients enrolled from October of 2013 to December of 2013, and approximately 4,800 successfully applied for Medi-Cal. That's huge. Family service specialists, as I said earlier, were placed on site at the Doctors Behavioral Health Center, which is a local psychiatric facility, to facilitate Medi-Cal enrollment. There was increased awareness of available resources or services throughout community due to visibility during outreach efforts. And also the customers assigned primary care physician for ongoing medical care with expanded scope of services. In addition, I won't go into all of them, but as you can see here, there's many different healthcare partnerships that were developed with local hospitals, private, as well as public agencies. And all these, again, what the partnership expressed in the application process was basically that they couldn't have done some of this, the work that they've done without these partners here. They've also had extended targeted outreach with them by mail, phone, in-person events, and the distribution of many flyers and brochures throughout the community. And over 20,000 flyers and brochures and 8,000 direct mail enrollment applications were circulated countywide.
Both of these programs have truly gone above and beyond the call of duty. Today we have two medically injured adults in the county, and I believe as both the managing director of the Health Services Agency and myself have advised your board since January 1, we've never had more than two, a combined total of 7 pending. And it's a remarkable tribute to getting coverage for people and really minimizing the county's general fund exposure for the cost of medically injured adults. So there's a huge financial story here that's beneficial to protecting our precious general fund resources that your board can then allocate to other top priority programs. Tonight, a special thank you to all of the departments, to the committee, to your board for your leadership and continuing to encourage the partnerships. We have a special recognition both for the two top winning partnership programs as well as the committee members. And on behalf of the Chief Executive Office staff, we'd like to join your board in congratulating them all and congratulating those top two that are going to be recognized tonight. Thank you to the board, and it is my honor to turn this over to our champion, Supervisor Dick Monteith. Supervisor Monteith.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure that we celebrate the partnership that has been chosen as the year's Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors Effective Partnership Award. And I really want to thank all of you for your efforts. The people of Stanislaus County have stepped up and addressed the needs of the county as we go forward in an attempt to become the best county in the state. You know, it takes a pride within a community to make these accomplishments.
And you can see the pride of the community when you see them volunteering and stepping up and addressing the needs. And it really is a great celebration tonight. The Effective Partnership Evaluation Committee reviewed some very good applicants this year. We saw the two partnerships that are being recognized tonight, and you have had a big impact on the county. However, the committee had the opportunity to review some of the other partnerships that are also having successes in our community. The evaluation committee evaluated partnerships that are committed, innovative, collaborative to meet the needs of Stanislaus County residents, and I thank you. For the non-government category of the Effective Partnership Award, I would like to ask Kathy Harwell from Community Service Agencies and their partnership members to please come up to accept the award for the Extended Foster Care Youth After 18 program. Would you please step up, please?
Go ahead, now come on up.
People can see you.
We have a nice award for you. And for everything you've done in this foster care program, I'm really quite impressed with it because the results, you know, somebody that's in foster care and really doesn't have the family support, then is 18 and just say, okay, you're out with no place to go and really no support from a family member. Almost impossible for a lot of them to make it and be able to continue their education. There you go, quite a group of you. Go ahead.
Come on
over here. So anyway, it's a pleasure to present this. Who's going to accept the award? Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. This a program that really does work well.
I'd like to say a few words.
Yes, thank you so much. You know, as Patty said, it really takes a community, and that's what this program is really all about. As everybody's standing up here, it's really taken everyone to be a part of making it a success, but most importantly, it's all about our foster youth. It's really their dreams and their hopes and their participation and their commitment that's made this program possible. And we have two foster youth today here with us who would like to say a couple words about what the program's meant to them.
My name is Kristen. I just want to thank you guys for the recognition. This program has been a lot for me. It has helped me grow as a person, and it provided a lot of different opportunities that I wouldn't have if I was in my previous home. And I'm just thankful that, you know, I aged out last week, so it sucks, but I'm thankful that, you know, I gotta be part of it. So, yeah, thank you.
Following up off of what Kristen said, my name is Stephanie, by the way. The program really has helped in a lot of ways. I've been in foster care since I was, I want to say, around 12 or 13, and it has really helped me in numerous ways with just the change of lifestyle and just education in general, and it's been a big help in regards with Project Yes. I know Dustin Pack is over there, MJC, and just the Community Service Agency in general, and I'd just like to thank all of you guys for supporting the foster youth in the community as well.
Yeah. Oh, you're joining the military? Okay. How about you?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, congratulations on that for a successful program. Any last words?
One other thing I'd like to do is thank, you know, because of the creativity of our employees and our staff, Nanita Dean couldn't be here tonight, and I just want to again express our appreciation to her, the managers, and our social workers that have been involved in the program, because it was through their ideas and their exception, and their inception and creativity that this has come to pass.
Okay, congratulations again.
Are you going to the Air Force, huh?
Yeah.
Well, now for the non-governmental category in the Effective Partnership Award. For the intergovernment category, of the Effective Partnership Award, I'd like to ask Catherine Passanisi. I know I mispronounced it. For the Health Service Agency, her partnership members, to please come up to accept the award for the Stanislaus County Affordable Care Act Implementation Partnership. On behalf of the Stanislaus County Supervisors and Effective Partnership Evaluation Committee, we congratulate your partnership, the Affordable Care Act, brought by a lot of unknowns through this partnership. In Stanislaus County, individuals enrolled in this benefit under the Affordable Care Act with ultimately benefits from a seamless transition and avoided disruption in these individual health care. Thank you again for all this effect in the program, and we just want to thank you once again, and Supervisor, Chairman, you step up and take care.
Okay, well, this is a really a great award to get the collaboration. Move down here a little bit. Sorry. Plenty of room here. I know there's a lot of government agencies really just work in their own silos and really are not even aware of what other agencies are doing, and you get a lot of duplication and redundancy. But, you know, an award like this shows that the agencies are working together for a common goal. When you get behavioral health, CSA, and health services agency to work together in the same playing field, you can get a lot done rather than working individually in your silos, which is typically, unfortunately, how government usually works. So congratulations on this. This is really the effort that we want to see in government, where everybody works together for the common goal. So I don't know who would accept this. Okay. Congratulations on this here. How about saying a few words?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman DeMartini, Board of Supervisors, Mr. Doring, and Mr. Risen, and also the members of the panel for the Effective Partnership. Thank you. This was a critical project that we needed to complete by December 31st, 2013. And knowing that we needed to do this, we met strategically. We started planning way in advance. There was a financial implication, like Patty Hill Thomas mentioned, but also we were focused on ensuring that the treatment of our critically ill patients were not interrupted or delayed in any way. So that was our focus. We started meeting, the three entities started meeting, and we together completed and accomplished our goal. The winners of all this were the three entities, but also our patients. Thank you.
Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Before we close, I would like to take this time to recognize the Effective Partnership Evaluation Committee. I think we have most of them here tonight, at least three out of the four. And these individuals volunteered to serve the committee and did an excellent job in reviewing the applications and making some difficult decisions on who would receive the award this year. So we have some recognitions for you, if you'd please come up. Mark Averell, Carmen Moran, I know Jeff Reed is not here today. Well, hi, good to see you again. Well, we have some plaques or recognition in your service to the community and evaluating these teams and coming up with our winners. So, you know, the county really depends upon volunteers to do a lot of jobs, too. And, you know, you took on this task, had to sift through everything and come up with the best of the best. So, thank you for your service there. And, Carmen, you'd like to say anything?
Thank you. Actually, I want to congratulate the two winners. All applicants were winners in our eyes. But we really would like to thank you all for all you do. It does make an impact. Congratulations to all of you.
I would like to second that as well. Tons of good applicants. It was really hard selecting the two, but was very, very impressed with the collaboration between the agencies. I mean, just a great example of what government truly should be. I was really impressed working in government. I was truly impressed.
I will just say once again, you have set the standard. Thank you. Keep it up.
Thank you again for your service.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we have no scheduled matters tonight. We will now move to correspondence.
I'll make a motion to approve that agenda item B12.
Second. Oh, sorry about that. I forgot that. Okay, motion's been made. Second, that we approve the item. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motion's carried. Thank you, Supervisor O'Brien. I fell down on the job. I'm glad they're all watching over me. Okay, I said we will now move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Department of Toxic Substances Control regarding a tetrachloroethane discharge at 1645 Princeton Avenue in Modesto, California.
Approved the Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports? It's our last meeting of the year. Well, I just can't resist in saying something anyway. Today, I did give out the last of the awards for the Westside Healthcare Task Force 2015 calendar. This is all the schools on the west side participated, even the private schools from Newman, Patterson, and Gustine. And we came up with our calendar a few weeks ago, and the last of the awards were given out today. They've focused on health and fitness themes. Also, so this is my last meeting as the chairman, so I've really kind of enjoyed the year. A few mistakes here and there, but hopefully not too many, and look forward to passing the torch to Supervisor Withrow.
You're a great chairman.
Tough shoes to fill there, Jim.
Get the golf.
Well, for a vote every once in a while, but it's an interesting job. I enjoy doing it. But it's a
job well done.
It's time to sit back now and
enjoy the meeting, yeah.
Yeah, and look forward to the State of the County address. Anybody else say anything? Okay, legislative and fiscal management report, Mr. Risen.
Well, I just want to wish everybody a safe and a wonderful holiday season, and look forward to good things in 2015, and that concludes my report.
Sure, right to the point. Being this other business, this meeting stands adjourned.